Five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Paul, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Hello and welcome to episode 37 of Field Pass Hockey's AHL podcast, The Holy Grail. Now, to kick off the show and to get you all acclimated to our voices and our faces here, instead of the standard introduction, I just have one question for you guys. What player that either made the NHL or was assigned to the AHL for opening night surprised you the most? Andrew, we'll start with you. We'll go right down the line.
Andrew Rinaldi, and I'm continuing on from last week. Justice for Potts, Andrew Podorowski.
And I'm Corey Swartz. I have a lot of them that we're probably going to get to in the midst of the show here. I'm definitely a bit surprised that there were some waiver claims from the Hershey Bears that should have been coming to the Hershey Bears, I should say. Both Axel Janssen-Fjällby and Brett Leeson did not make the Washington Capitals lineup and were therefore claimed on waivers. So I don't think too many teams were, you know, there are a couple teams that, you know, were as surprised as I were, I'm sure.
And I'm Dina Weinheimer, and I apologize in advance if I steal the person after me, if I steal his pick. But David Juracek going to the Monsters, that's exciting. I am so here for it.
Yeah, Dina, you are all good. What's up, everyone? I'm Jeremy Paul, and I cover our Cleveland Monsters beat. But I'm going to stick with the beat bias. I was nervous. I was so petrified that you were going to take this from me, Dina. But I was a little bit surprised to see Liam Foudy stay up with the Columbus Blue Jackets and not make his way back down to Cleveland this season. He suffered an injury last season that kept him out of the AHL lineup for most of the year. And a lot of folks wondered if he was going to be ready to crack that main roster this year. And, courtesy of potentially a couple of injuries there in their forward core in Columbus, he's up there. And so we'll see if he stays up there for a while. But a couple guys that people thought were going to fall down to Cleveland stayed up in Columbus, and good on them.
I'm Zach Power. One of the biggest surprises with the waiver day that was, I think, is Wayne Simmonds on Toronto.
Yeah, that one floored me, honestly. I was not expecting that at all. But guys, it's time to get into some breaking news. And Jeremy has a little bit of exciting news regarding the Monsters and the Penguins. What's up with them?
Yeah, well, first of all, the breaking news is that graphic is pretty legit to start. And so following that up, yeah, the Cleveland Monsters and Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins are going to face off in the Cleveland Monsters Outdoor Classic. And that'll be happening at First Energy Stadium in Cleveland on Saturday, March 4th. Still pretty cold up there by Lake Erie that time of year. So you're going to want to bring your jackets. But the Monsters will meet the Penguins in the first outdoor professional hockey game ever in the city of Cleveland. It's going to be the 11th outdoor game in AHL history. And so situated on the shores of Lake Erie, First Energy Stadium is currently the home of the NFL's Cleveland Browns. And so this will be the second outdoor event in which the Monsters have participated. They visited the Rochester Americans at Frontier Field in December of 2013. So the Penguins played in one also. They played the Hershey Bears outdoors at Hershey Park Stadium in January of 2013. Corey, I have a feeling that you might have been at that game potentially. and tickets are going to be going on sale starting at only $10. That's a steal to be able to watch some outdoor professional hockey if you've never done it before. So definitely check that one out, because those tickets are going to go quick, I think, and they're going to be able to be available for purchase. You're going to visit clevelandmonsters.com/outdoor, or you can call 216-420-0000. So yeah, big news out there by Lake Erie, without a doubt.
I'm excited to go to that game, but I'm also kind of dreading being for those of you that don't know, this stadium is literally on the shores of Lake Erie. It's not just a say, you know, a saying like, oh, well, Cleveland's on the lake. No, literally, it's on the shoreline. I'm not looking forward to that in outdoors in March, but just the excitement around it, an outdoor game, I can't wait.
I think they'll have just as much success in that field as the Browns do.
No, we're not going there, Zach. We are not going there.
We're several months away, and you already jinxed them.
Woof.
And Jeremy, was that just a pun for you saying to bring your jackets?
Ooh, you might have to bring your jackets because it's going to be cold. It's going to be cold.
Well, we'll see if we can't work that into a story a little bit closer on. You know, maybe there might be some finagling of the rosters around that time to get the best team out there. So, but now that we got the breaking news out of the way, guys, we have got an exciting show for you. Now, we always say, yeah, we have a special guest, you know, stick around. But for this one, it doesn't get much bigger than this special guest with the American Hockey League. Later on in the show, AHL President and CEO Scott Housen is joining us later on in the show. So stick around for that. But in the meantime, we're going to go over a little bit of a news recap from the past week. Now, to start off, we do have to provide a bit of a trigger warning for those that are sensitive to discussions around sexual assault or any sort of talk around that subject. I will be putting a timestamp down in the notes for you to skip ahead to. And again, just like, unfortunately, we had to do this last season too, but we will be providing some resources if you find yourself in a situation and you need to find some help. We'll have some stuff in the show notes too, but we'll just get right into the news. There's no real glossing over it, but earlier this week, the Bakersfield Condors relieved their head athletic trainer of his duties. The news around this is late in the evening on October 9th, the Bakersfield Condors actually released a statement that read, quote, earlier today, we became aware that the Bakersfield Condors head athletic trainer Chad Brown had been charged with very serious felony offenses related to contacting a minor to commit a sexual offense in the state of California. We are shocked and dismayed by the news, and Mr. Brown has been relieved of his duties immediately. Now, almost immediately after that was released, their parent club, the Edmonton Oilers, followed up with a statement saying, quote, we are working closely with Bakersfield Condors management and fully support the decision to relieve Mr. Drowned of his duties, end quote. Now, just a little bit of details around this. According to the Bakersfield Californian, that statement was actually released nearly 4 hours after Chad Drown was arrested by the Kern County Sheriff's Office. He was actually arrested at 4:07 on Sunday afternoon on suspicion of 3 counts related to contacting a minor with intent to commit a sexual offense, 2 felony and 1 misdemeanor count. They also stated that this was part of a decoy operation where sheriff's deputies pose as minors in an attempt to catch predators. Drown joined the Condors prior to the 2018-19 season after a season as an assistant trainer with the Tucson Roadrunners. He had previously worked in junior hockey as a referee and a trainer and had a stint as an athletic therapist with Hockey Canada's under-18 team. Honestly, I'm just so sad that we're having to talk about something similar to this again. It's heartbreaking. It really is.
I feel like we had almost the exact same conversation starting the season last year with the incident with the Wilkes-Barre, and here we are again. You know, and it's been a really difficult time to be a hockey fan when, you know, you see a story like this passing through after you've just scrolled through and you've read the statement from the victim of Ian Cole and everything that's been going on with Hockey Canada over the last couple of months. It's like, where does it end? And, you know, I know the whole thing is about, you know, hockey culture and everything. And I just, you know, it twists my stomach to read about these people who are suffering. And, you know, if the culture really is that toxic, I want to know what do we got to do to change it? And it's going to take an effort from top to bottom, everyone, all hands on deck. And I think that's what the part that really gets me is that you read this kind of stuff and you kind of do feel helpless that, you know, like, what can we do? I mean, we're not in any positions of power. We're on a podcast, but I do think it takes an entire community, and it's going to take all of us to have to change and to do something to really kind of make this right, because I'm getting, trying to keep a PG, but I'm getting pretty sick of reading these stories.
Yeah. And I think the thing that is important is creating space for the conversations that we're trying to have, right? Like, on this show, I think we're pretty intentional about, you know, identifying instances within hockey and just within society that make us uneasy and, you know, disgusted. And again, kind of to Andrew's point, trying to keep things a little PG here, but, you know, it's the discomfort that we all feel like is what we need to make sure everybody is feeling, right? Like, we need to make sure that everybody is having a similar reaction and ensuring that the responses that are happening around us are, you know, copacetic, right? I mean, like, we're all hockey fans, right? Like, all five of us on this show are hockey fans. We're hockey fans outside of our involvement with Field Pass. We go to games, we see things, we hear things, and it starts there, right? Like, as much as it does start from the top down, it starts in the stands, right? Like, it starts in hearing a, you know, a misogynistic or homophobic slur in the stands and challenging a fellow fan to be better, right? Like, it starts there. And I think by having these conversations in this space, hopefully we're making some people feel comfortable in having those interactions, because those suck. Like, those are uncomfortable, but we'll be a better sports fandom if it's happening. And I encourage folks to, if they hear something, say something and challenge those that are around you to be better, because we can be better. We have to be better. Like, there's no other option.
Yeah. You took the words right out of my mouth there, Jeremy. That's what I was, you know, teed up to say there. You know, it starts on our individual actions, and, you know, can only hope that it, you know, starts there and builds up into a better conversation and, you know, a change in across the board. Is, you know, it's something that does need to change across the board. And, you know, like you said, it's a very difficult conversation, you know, a difficult thing to, you know, put into practice, as well as to, you know, say to change as well as to be changed. So, you know, it's an important thing for us to start with and to, you know, carry forward for sure.
And I think the biggest message in all this that we're trying to relay to you right now is that we all feel the same anger, the same sort of frustration with this, like you do. Everything from the NHL down to Hockey Canada. I personally feel disgusted that I paid into registration into Hockey Canada years and years ago. And I look into situations like these just as frustrated as everybody else. And I think that we need to remember that we need to start moving forward with a path towards a brighter future without this sort of thing happening again.
And I love the mantra. I forget which one of you said it. Basically, if you see something, say something. That can apply to so many different things in our life. But just to kind of wrap this up, again, if you are in this situation, we are putting different resources for help. I know it's difficult to reach out when you find yourself in this kind of situation, but don't be afraid to advocate for yourself. There are people that care, and we as a community have to rally around these people. And perhaps that's maybe the silver lining, is that now, like, we're seeing it with the Ian Cole situation, that, you know, the statement comes out and there are so many people rallying around this person to try to get them the help and find out the full truth in this situation. So if no one else has anything to say about that, I think we're going to just go ahead and move on to other news from this past week. It's kind of hard to transition from such a heavy subject into, you know, the lighthearted rest of the show, but, you know, it's something that we have to do. But guys, we're coming down to the last few days of the off season. By the time this podcast is coming out, we're basically in the American Hockey League season for 2022-23. So of course, 'tis the season for waiver claims. And Corey has got some details on some big moves on the waiver wire this week.
Yes, there was a long list. Teams had to be, you know, submitting their 23-man rosters here just a couple of days prior to this podcast coming out. So there's a long list of players on waivers. but some pickups and transactions happened in the meantime. Two-time AHL All-Star goaltender Connor Ingram was claimed off of waivers by the Arizona Coyotes. He was one of five players claimed. The biggest loser was, of course, my Washington Capitals, and by that extension, Hershey Bears. They had two players claimed off of waivers. As Axel Janssen-Fjällby was claimed by the Winnipeg Jets, and the Anaheim Ducks claimed forward Brett Leeson as two of the four players that the Capitals put on waivers going into this last little stretch here of the preseason. In addition to that, the Florida Panthers claimed defenseman Josh Mahura from Anaheim. So, you know, kind of what goes around comes around, I suppose, with the Ducks for, in that respect. And the Chicago Blackhawks claimed defenseman Jared Tenorti from the New York Rangers.
Now, those are just a handful of roster moves that have happened ever since, well, the end of last season. And, you know, last week we talked about all the head coaching changes in the AHL. But this week, continuing on our primer for the American Hockey League season, we're going to focus on some of the other significant changes to the rosters. Again, the focus here is on the word significant, you know, because if we ran down every single change, yeah, I'm pretty sure opening weekend's going to be done by the time we finish that list. So, but first, we do want to recognize some AHLers who have made the jump and are on an NHL opening night roster. Now, these guys make up a portion of 590 AHL graduates across the NHL's 32 opening day rosters. That's 83% of the player pool for the NHL. Just, that, yeah, wow. So anyway, here's this list. For the Arizona Coyotes, Matias Michelli. For the Buffalo Sabres, you heard us talk about these two a lot last season, and obviously it was for a good reason. JJ Paterka and Jack Quinn. Same thing with these next two names. For the Carolina Hurricanes, Stefan Nason and Jalen Chatfield. For the Edmonton Oilers, Dylan Holloway. Minnesota Wild, Marco Rossi. Nashville Predators, Cole Smith and Kiefer Sherwood. Fun fact, Kiefer Sherwood actually scored the first goal officially for this NHL season. So fun trivia fact to keep in your back pocket there. For the New Jersey Devils, Alexander Holtz and Fabian Zetterlund. The St. Louis Blues, I know Corey's happy about this one, Nathan Walker. For the Tampa Bay Lightning, Cole Koepke. And for the Vancouver Canucks, Jack Rathbone. Now, we're going to dive into this other list of player movement across the AHL and abroad.
Yeah, so one of the bigger changes here to start off was Dennis Cholowski going from the Charlotte Checkers, or more accurately, the Seattle Kraken organization, as they split affiliations with the Charlotte Checkers last season, to the New York Islanders organization, two-year, two-way contract. And he joins the Islanders after, you know, obviously splitting time with Seattle and Charlotte, but also a long stint with the Washington Capitals as a waiver pickup, of all things, coming fresh off of that discussion where he, you know, stayed in Washington for a little bit and was reclaimed on waivers later on in the season. He's a good veteran in addition to the blue line if he's at the AHL level and, you know, should be pushing for a spot at the NHL level, truthfully.
And with Stuart Skinner kind of moving up to the Edmonton Oilers from the Bakersfield Condors, the Edmonton organization kind of filled that hole in net by bringing in Calvin Pickard, who had been with the Griffins since the 2019-2020 season. Last year, he finished with a 21-16-5 record and actually picked up 4 assists in 43 games to go with, along with 2.5 goals against average and a .918 save percentage. He was really a big piece of that Griffins team, but now that they've brought in a Olympic gold-winning goaltender and Yusiel Kanyora and a blue-chip prospect in Sebastian Kosa, while he's been kind of pushed out of that crease in Grand Rapids, and he's looking to be a big part of that that resurgence over there in Bakersfield.
And I know we spend a lot of time, we talk about folks like Matthew Tkachuk and Mackenzie Weegar and Jonathan Huberto. I'm here to talk to you all about Cole Schwent, who was also a part of the package that sent Matthew Tkachuk to Florida. He will be making his debut this season with Calgary's newest Wranglers. And so he's going to have an opportunity to really make a name for himself. He's probably one of Calgary's – he immediately becomes one of Calgary's top prospects. he's got skill, and folks are finally starting to talk about just how meaningful he was as part of this deal. So look for Cole Schwendt to have a lot of things to say about, you know, being shipped in that deal, and he's going to say it all on the ice.
One big one for me that stood out is Mikael Berdan, who's going to be going over to Europe. And this man here can get across the crease like any other goaltender I've seen in the AHL, really, or the NHL for that matter. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. He's given the Moose opportunities to win games, and anybody on YouTube just seen the clip of him there. And I think that it's a tough loss for the Manitoba Moose and the Jets organization.
And one big one for me here in the Atlantic Division is the movement of Sam Anas from the Springfield Thunderbirds, the defending Eastern Conference champion, to the Hershey Bears. As a former AHL leading scorer, he's already come in and made a good impact in the preseason for the Bears, as I'm sure you're seeing with his nifty assist to Shane Gersich in Hershey's preseason finale. But he was a big reason of Springfield's success, both in the regular season and the playoffs, as one of their leading scorers, as well as, you know, obviously his previous history of you know, putting up big points in a lot of games, really getting a chance to shine with the Bears and being in the system that, you know, initially spun him out as a former Little Capital and a Virginia native there for sure. So it should be an exciting addition. And right along with the Atlantic Division is Jordy Bellerive, switching side of the Penguins and Phantoms rivalry to join the Lehigh Valley Phantoms after a few years over in Wilkes-Barre. Just a real grit and sandpaper kind of guy. Kind of guy you love to have on your team. You know, he'll stick up for teammates in fights, you know, chipping crucial points. You know, definitely fits both organizations to a T here, but he'll be putting on the orange and black this coming season.
Now, spoiler alert, this is one of two Sakuras on this list. First of all, we're going to talk about Dylan Sakura. Spent last season in the Colorado organization, Eagles / Avalanche, now on the move to Chicago and Rockford, the Chicago Blackhawks, of course, and the Rockford IceHogs. After two seasons away, Dylan Sakura is back in Rockford. While on that upstart Eagles squad, Sakura finished fifth in the league during the regular season when goals with 33 goals in 60 games.
Going coast to coast from New Jersey all the way down to Anaheim, another homecoming for Chase DeLeo, another rated AHL player that is on that list right now, scored right around a point per game last year and will provide a great forwarding for the San Diego Gulls or the Anaheim Ducks, depends on where he lands.
And stop me if you've heard this name before, Andrew Podorolski. Going from the reigning Calder Cup champions there in Chicago into the Seattle organization. After signing a two-year, one-way deal with the Kraken, we thought he was finally going to make that jump to the NHL. Well, looks like it's been a little delayed a little bit, and his leadership is needed to help get the Firebirds through a grueling opening stretch of their inaugural season.
Another big one switching back over to the East here is Anthony Angelo, switching from the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, where he's spent parts of, or, you know, for the majority of his career with the Penguins for five seasons, both in Wilkes-Barre and Pittsburgh, to the Springfield Thunderbirds. He's put up some strong numbers at the AHL level and, you know, looks to be a real solid addition to the Springfield Thunderbirds as they look to defend their Eastern Conference crown. You know, to hopefully hit even greater heights in terms of points and scoring if the St. Louis Blues aren't interested in the services at the NHL level. I mean, he's a guy that I think can go either way. You know, certainly will be a big plus to the Thunderbirds while he's there.
Yeah, talking about another plus to the Thunderbirds, they're really bulking up. They got Martin Furk coming in. I had to write down his stats. 40 goals, 33 assists, and under 60 games last year. That's good for second in the league behind Podorolski. And if you ask me, he was one of the most valuable players in the AHL last season.
Another big name on the move is Connor Ingram. This move is actually pretty recent as Nashville set their opening night roster earlier this week. Ingram had to be placed on waivers, and unfortunately for Nashville, he was claimed by those pesky Coyotes with their number one waiver claim. 25-year-old appeared in 54 games for the Milwaukee Admirals last season. He only put up a 30-17-7 record with a 270 goals against average and a 915 save percentage and, you know, five shutouts, nothing too crazy. He also made his NHL debut with the Nashville Predators last season. He made 3 appearances in the regular season and 4 more in the Stanley Cup playoffs, where he kind of made a name for himself against that juggernaut Colorado Avalanche. And really kind of a surprising name to see there on the waivers. But, you know, I guess when you have a guy like Yaroslav Askarov and Devin Cooley, there's only just so much room in that crease.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of firepower, along with Martin Furkia, another player who made the shift west is Riley Barber, who shifts to the Western Conference for the first time in his career after tallying 28 goals and 53 points with the Grand Rapids Griffins in 49 games this past season. Big-time sniper, should be a huge boost to the Texas Stars as they look to, you know, be in contention for the top of the Western Conference this season.
Yeah, and a little bit of shameless season preview plug here. This is the player that I said is one of the biggest departures for the Cleveland Monsters, and that's Tyler Sekura. So he's heading over to the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, so that'll be a fun little reunion that happens in Cleveland on March 4th. But, Sekura is one of Cleveland's biggest losses. Like I said, he's a veteran AHLer who would have been an incredible asset to that lineup as we look down the Monsters roster and see just a ton of really young guys who have a lot of potential but could really benefit from having that leadership. And he was productive too, right? Like, so that's going to be somebody that's going to be missed there in the room for Cleveland. And I can you guys believe it took until October 3rd for this guy to end up on a roster?
I still don't believe it. I'm sure everybody on our group chat, on our writers, or I guess on our site Discord channel, was getting so tired of me going with every single signing, what about Tyler Sekura? When's the time for Tyler Sekura? Who's going to sign Tyler Sekura? Well, now they don't have to listen to me anymore.
Yeah, Dina, you don't have to send a message, hey, today is September blank, and Tyler Sekura doesn't have a contract still. So, he's got a deal, but it's unfortunately not with the Cleveland Monsters, and they're going to feel that.
And a good deal for that. And finally, one big name that I want to kind of get out there is Richard Klund, who announced he's retiring over the summer. He's a guy that, every team needs someone in their corner sometimes, and Richard Klund was that guy. And he provided physicality when needed, leadership when needed. As anybody on YouTube is watching him go for a nice little fight against Stockton in Calgary. And I mean, best of luck for him. And he's going to be retiring, but he's also going to be staying in the Maple Leafs Marlies offices so he can help out some future prospects in the AHL and NHL.
And we do have a few, I guess, kind of honorable mentions, just running through this real quick. Alex Lyon, off to Charlotte. Charles Hudon, Colorado. Turner Elson's going to be with the Wolfpack. Troy Grosenick, Lehigh Valley. Andrew Agostino heading out to the Barracuda in San Jose. Anthony Angelo on the road to Springfield. And then Jean-Sebastien D is a road runner. All right. Now, guys, time to move on to a little bit of fun. My personal favorite segment, swipe left and swipe right. Real quick rules. We're all going to be offering our opinions. Well, the guys are. I'm not due to time constraints, but they're going to offer their opinion. We're either going to swipe left or swipe right. And then if we like it, the super swipe up is still in play, although not for all of us. A couple of us did use it last week, so keep that in mind. All right, we're just going to go in alphabetical order. Andrew, you are up.
All right, so after I got burned last season for calling Lehigh to win the Atlantic, I'm kind of a bit skeptical about making another preseason pick, but you know what? These are meant to be hot takes anyway, so I'm going to go to a hot start to the season with the hot new team in town, and I'm calling it, I think Coachella Valley is going to be making a playoff run this year. I like the energy, and I think once they get back in their barn, they're going to have a kind of a resurgence, and I think they got it in them. I like the names that they got going down there. If Potts is still there, anything is possible.
I mean, I don't like the Potts angle is the thing that has me intrigued. And I mean, when you're talking about a Pacific Division that's got, I was going to say 10 teams fighting for a playoff spot, but then I remember that the Barracuda play in the Pacific Division, and I was like, wow, we got 9 teams playing for 7 playoff spots. But I don't see why not. I don't see, like, sure,
they've obviously, like, you've got a team in Seattle up there as their affiliate that is obviously trying to stockpile as many prospects as they can, and we'll see if it comes through to fruition. I think I would swipe right on any take right now that was a playoff take, because you never know, and I want to be the smartest guy in the room, so give me a swipe right.
Potts, Alexander True, Joey Decord, an expanded playoff format, easy right swipe.
You had me at Alexander True. I mean, having seen him in Charlotte enough last season, playing against the Bears and playing against a number of teams, True and Podorowski are big-time scorers. And, you know, since correct me if I'm wrong, if you guys may know this a little bit more than me, but I think if they may have played together at one point in the past in Charlotte, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong about that. But, you know, those two guys are big-time scorers. They're elite. Joey Decord is fantastic. You know, putting all that into account, I'd give that swipe right. They'll make the playoffs and make a good push. I may not say Calder Cup bound at this point, but, you know, I'd definitely be willing to say they're going to make a run.
You know what? I think I'm going to be the dark horse here, and I don't think that they're going to make the playoffs. Simple reason, look at the front end of their schedule. Look at what they were given as a Christmas gift. A Christmas gift that late in the season is not a good gift. A home opener going all the way into December, it's what, 18 games on the road? I can't see them being off on a good enough start. And Andrew Podorowski, if I was putting bets down on it, that's going to be his Christmas gift. He's going to be sent to the NHL. I mean, right now, I just don't see it. And if Dan Bylsma gets a hold of that power play, I talked a little bit about it in my season preview. Watch out for that. If Dan Bylsma gets a hold of that power play, you can count it as good as done. For me, I don't think that they're going to make it. So, sorry, buddy.
Well, I think I may have made this assertion once before on the show, maybe, but it's been a little while, so I figure it's worth bringing up again. But it is past time for the trapezoid restrictions, or really most of the restrictions on goaltenders in general, to be retired, I think. It's about time we should be able to see goalies, you know, be able to make that gutsy play to skate out to the corner boards to play the puck. Or, you know, heck, if they want to cross center ice and, you know, play the puck, take a shot on goal, something, I'm here for the chaos. I want to be able to see a goalie coming out for a delayed call, you know, skate it up if he wants to a little bit or dump it in or something like that. No fear, no restrictions, shouldn't be a thing. I think the goalie should be allowed to play the puck a lot more.
You know, one of my favorite all-time highlights is Patrick Waugh putting Wayne Gretzky in the spin cycle at center ice. And I want more of that, especially on my beat. You have Pyotr Kochetkov, who plays the puck like a third defenseman back there. But Marty Brodeur ruined it for the rest of us, and I don't think it's coming back. I want it to come back. I just, you know, what I want and what are actually going to happen are two different things. So I'm going to swipe right on it.
I'm going to have to swipe left. Simple protection of the goaltenders. I think hockey has really become a very fast game since we've seen goaltenders have so much freedom. And you have one of those Connor McDavids whizzing by you and decks you in the back. Forget about it. Doesn't matter how much gear that the goaltenders have nowadays compared to then. There's no way.
Man, I feel like a jerk because I was about to come in here like full swing, like full chaos, full this, full that. And Zach's like, what if they get hurt? And I'm like, well, okay. I think I'm more keen to the idea of loosening the restrictions on the trapezoid. The center icing, I've got a little bit of hesitation on just because of actually a similar reason, right? Like, and also just for the safety of other players too, right? Like thinking through all the padding that the goaltenders are wearing too. Zach had to be an agent of morality here, but I'm going to swipe right. I think to Andrew's point, like about Pyotr Kochetkov, right? Like if you have a goaltender that has this in their skill deck, in their skill bank, like, yeah, like if they can do it to help their team, I'm all for it. Swipe right.
Now, I'm normally one of the first people to just throw my hands up in the air and go, yes, chaos, give me all the chaos. But, I mean, you had me until you mentioned, you know, center ice line. Maybe if we dial back a little bit to, like, you know, anywhere behind the faceoff dot, I don't know. There's, if we let up on that rule, what Avalanche is that going to start? This, I hate to do it to you, but I'm going to have to swipe left on this one.
I will add to my points about this is A, Joel Hofer scoring a goal in the playoffs was fantastic last season. And B, I watched a lot of three ice over the summer. So I got to watch, you know, no rules. The goalie, you know, it was a very rare thing, even in three ice with as much chaos as going on there, where the goalie would rush up the ice. It happened every once in a while. It almost never works out. So it's not like I'm saying we're going to change the rule to be the goalie has to join the rush on a delayed call or, you know, something to that effect. It'll still be very rare. But, you know, you think to some of the clips, you know, there was a time in the NHL where a goalie was skating to the bench and had the puck end up in his feet. And he couldn't do that much with it because he was, you know, about on the center ice line. So, you know, I'm not saying, you know, advocating for extreme rules like that. But, you know, if it's there, you know, we talked about, you know, loosening some rules in the past, like the helmet rule. When you lose a helmet, you have to skate right off the ice type of thing. It'd be more in the vein of that where, you know, you just have a little bit more freedom to make that quick play or, you know, something along those lines, truly.
I was wondering if that wasn't three ice inspired, but you answered my question.
Few things are, but that might be one. But yeah, Corey, I'm so glad you're on the show, like not only just for all the obvious reasons, but also because I'm usually the one that has the takes that are like have like some little caveat in there that makes them not appealing to people. So thank you for being here and taking that the brunt of that with me, because I'm probably about to do it again. So Andrew, my friend, I'm sorry for doing this to you, but the great departure of approximately the entire Chicago Wolves lineup is going to make for an interesting season in Chicago. It's going to make the Central far more competitive. Book it now. Milwaukee's going to win the Central. And Grand Rapids is going to have a home playoff series.
I said last week that Milwaukee was going to win the Central. And that was before that Nashville announced that they were sending down Phil Tomasino, who was a point-of-game player in this league 2 years ago. So that, I mean, that just is absolutely absurd. And the Admirals are going to be ridiculously talented between him and Luke Evangelista and Jordan Gross and Yusso Parson. And I can talk all day about these names. They're not even going to miss Connor Ingram. That's the ridiculous part about it. They already have two solid goalies. They're not even really going to miss him. But I really don't think that the Wolves are like just going to plummet to the bottom of the basement, because if there's one thing that the Carolina Hurricanes pride themselves on, it's the depth of their organization. Vasily Ponomarev looked like he was going to be a shocking pick to make the Carolina roster and was one of the last cuts to be sent down to Chicago. They got Jack Drury coming back. I thought he was going to be a sure thing in Carolina, but I'm going to swipe right on it because I do think Milwaukee's going to take it, but I don't think it's going to be – you're not getting a super swipe. I don't think it's going to be as easy for the Admirals as we're making it out to be.
I'll just say ditto everything Andrew said. I trust him.
You know me. I don't really like to make picks, but I will say this. The thought of Milwaukee actually winning the division is actually somewhat probable. As for Grand Rapids, it's Detroit. It's Detroit we're talking about here. I'm going to do this.
What's that supposed to mean?
No shame. I'm going for the same morals as I did last year, is I'm not jinxing anybody this year.
I'll swipe right on that, just in the vein of saying that it's going to be more competitive. Now, like with Chicago last year, they were far and away, you know, the top dog for so long. And, you know, I think it's going to be fun to have a little more, you know, some more vying for the crown there. I think Milwaukee is probably the early favorite. I mean, I'm not as much of a Central Division expert to be able to tell you I can make a pick and feel 100% confident in it. But, you know, I think it's going to be very competitive. And, you know, I'm here for an interesting season in the Central Division for sure.
My big proposition for you guys is that I think that the AHL should go to the same rules as the NHL. And maybe this is a question for Scott Allison coming up a little later about that format and how exactly that works. But I do think that the AHL should adopt the same one as the NHL, and that, you know, there's no buy, there's nothing. You're going in with the same amount from each conference, each division, and there's no questions to be asked all around.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm sad I already used my super swipe. Can I buy another one?
You got to buy the premium Holy Grail subscription.
How much is that?
I hear it's $14.99 a month, but that's just from sources that aren't related to me.
Who do I send that to?
Me.
Okay, send me your Venmo. I'll get it to you, Super Swipe.
So if you asked me this last year, I would have said, like, oh, I like the uniform format that the NHL has, you know. The buys are really confusing, and I thought that might throw some teams off, especially the way that they were spaced out. The Wolves, after the end of the season, had like a almost 2-week break before they even saw hockey again. But that being said, our guest kind of alludes to having more meaningful games for more franchises, and to do that, you got to have an expanded format. And I kind of agree with his reasoning was pretty sound, so I'm going to swipe left on this. I don't like it, but I understand the need for it.
I think it's a fascinating proposition, Zach. I'm the same way. Like, it feels more legit to have a playoff that, like, people don't look at and think 23 teams out of 32 make the playoffs for that. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's not aesthetically pleasing by any means of the word. But I think we all can agree that for the most part, the playoffs turned out essentially with some, you know, variance, essentially the way we expected it would have if there was a 16-team format, right? Like, I think the teams that needed to be where they were there. And Chicago, like, that's the kind of thing that I think, like, ultimately the end result was the same. And to Andrew's point, you know, just the idea of more meaningful hockey for teams and also the money, the revenue, like, I get it. I don't love it, but I get it. And so I'm going to swipe left, but only after I've, like, closed out and hope that your profile doesn't come back up and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, that's a tough call, honestly. You know, I know for some teams it was a concession to give up games, and for some teams it was a concession to take on more games, you know, depending on where they were at in the, you know, individual points of the season. I think I'm going to agree with Jeremy and swipe left on it. I mean, I don't love the format. I do love that, you know, we don't have to, as I said last week, we don't have to worry about, you know, doing points percentage for trying to figure out standings. It makes our lives a little bit easier that way. But, you know, I do think that if there's one perk to the playoff format is that, you know, it definitely puts an emphasis on winning first and second place, or, you know, however each division's set up to, you know, get that bye and not have to be forced into a best of three, even if that means you get a little bit of a layoff type of thing. You know, the home ice advantage is a huge incentive. I think it incentivizes that just maybe a little bit more than it did in the old format. So, you know, there's pros and cons of both, I would say, in that situation.
Now it is time to move on to our special guest. Now, when it comes to the American Hockey League, there are few bigger figures right now than our guest, the president and chief executive officer, Scott Housen. Now, he was unanimously elected as the 10th president in American Hockey League history on February 14th, 2020, taking over for Dave Andrews officially for the 2020-21 season as Andrews transitioned over to his role as the chairman of the Board of Governors. Now, prior to that, he actually spent 26 years as an executive with the NHL's Edmonton Oilers and the Columbus Blue Jackets with a lot of different responsibilities from hockey operations and administration, player development, scouting, business operations, contract negotiations. More than likely, he's been there, done that. Now, he was named general manager of the Blue Jackets back in 2007, spending six seasons in that role, guiding the franchise to their first Stanley Cup appearance in 2009. And then, of course, joining the Edmonton organization back in 1994 as the general manager of their then AHL affiliate in Cape Breton and later in Hamilton, and then was named assistant to the general manager of the Oilers in 2000, and then serving as assistant GM of the NHL club from 2001 to 2007. Now, Housen's AHL clubs reached the Calder Cup finals in 1997 and 2003, And he was also a member of the AHL Board of Governors, serving on the league's competition committee from 1996 to 2002, and on the executive committee from 2003 to 2007. Quite the resume. Now, all of that on top of his years as a player. Now he is joining us here on the Holy Grail podcast. Scott Housen, welcome to the show, and thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
We are very excited to have you here. Now, of course, I just read down your resume. You've had roles all across the front office in pro hockey, in addition to your years as a player. Now, how have those experiences kind of helped guide you in your current role? I mean, does being a former player in pro hockey give you any special insight on how to lead the league today?
Well, I think so. You have the experience of knowing what the players are going through, and you can always draw on that. But really, this is where I cut my teeth. I joined the Oilers in 1994, and I was general manager of the AHL team in Cape Breton, and I continued my association with the AHL team right up until I got the job in Columbus. So I really cut my teeth. I grew as a professional. I grew as a person, and always have a strong affinity and very grateful to the AHL.
Now, when you took over for Dave Andrews back in the 2020-21 season, of course, you were hit with some really unprecedented decisions and obstacles given the pandemic. I'm just kind of curious as to your thoughts about all the changes and the challenges that the league has gone through since that point.
Well, everybody went through it. It wasn't just the AHL or hockey, or everybody went through it. I got the job in February, as you mentioned. I was supposed to travel to Springfield May 1st and transition with Dave for 2 months and then take over on July 1. Well, that went out the window, and I didn't get to Springfield, I think, till October. We were ready to bring some people back into the office in October. So, and then it was just, you know, what are we going to do in terms of starting the season? We kept delaying the start. And then finally we were lucky enough to have a February start date. We decided, I think, at the end of December, we were going to play in February with great assistance and great help from the NHL, I might add. And so we had a truncated season, and we got through it, and I was very proud of our group to get through that. It wasn't easy. I look at a sport like baseball. The minor league baseball teams didn't play at all in 2020. We were lucky enough to get, you know, even 25 or 45 games in for some of our teams. So I was very proud of that and how our group worked together and got through a very difficult time.
Now, as we turn into this season, let's kind of talk about the Western Conference, specifically the Pacific Division. There's 10 teams currently there, including a couple new teams in Coachella Valley and the relocated Calgary Wranglers. Has there been any talks in the league or any discussions about realignment to kind of even out the divisions in the future?
Yeah, that's always a point of discussion. It's the way the Pacific Division was originally started, it gave teams the right to move in. We can realign within the division, but the league does have that to split it into two divisions if we want. But to bring a team out of the Pacific Division and say put them in the Central or somewhere else would require board approval, and it really wouldn't be fair to those teams. That all those teams joined that division to play in that division. It was very important to them. And it's year by year. We'll see what goes on. 10 teams, the look is unbalanced. There's no balance. And we understand that. And one of the things that's important for the Pacific Division is to get all those playoff spots. So we did overcome that. The 7 teams out of the 10 will make the playoffs in the Pacific. But it's always something we're looking at. And if there's a way to improve it, we will.
So, again, looking specifically at this season, have there been any changes to officiating, or are they going to be kind of looking for any special points of emphasis or rule enforcement that the fans should be on the lookout for this year?
Not really. There's sort of a slight change. There's nothing in the rule book, but a slight change on how we're going to call when the player's helmet comes off. In prior years, if a player's helmet came off, he had to go right to the bench or he was given a penalty. And now if he's in the middle of a play or playing the puck, he's allowed to go ahead and do that before getting off the ice. But really, not much has changed officiating wise or rule wise. It was a pretty calm summer for that.
Now, I just wanted to also kind of ask, last season we saw the emergence of female officials. Just from a growing the game standpoint, can you just give us your thoughts on how they did their first season and just kind of that partnership that we're seeing from the ECHL, AHL, and NHL when it comes to being in and developing new officials?
Yeah, we're all working together. There's an officiating crisis in all of sports, and hockey's no exception, particularly at the younger levels. I know here in Massachusetts, they're searching for officials for hockey, but we're very proud of the fact that we were able to introduce our 10 female officials last year. Last year we were, I think, 7-3. This year we'll be 9-2. Kirsten Welsh, who some of you may or may not know, has been added to the NHL prospect list as a lines person. So she'll be doing games again for us, and hopefully she can grow. And hopefully at some point, somebody's going to get to the NHL, and maybe it will be her.
So on Tuesday, it was announced, and I'm personally very excited for this news, that the Cleveland Monsters and the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins are going to be facing off in an outdoor classic in Cleveland at First Energy Stadium in early March. Now, of course, this is the 11th outdoor game in league history, but it's the first one since 2018. Can you give us a little bit of insight as to how this idea came about and why the Penguins and the Monsters?
Well, it was really Cleveland Monsters driven. They told us a few months ago that they might want to do this, and they were going to work on it and see if it was feasible. There's so much planning and so many things to think about. We just went through a checklist this weekend internally at the staff, and there's like a 7 or 8 page document that they have to think about all the requirements, whether, you know, something as simple as making sure that the locker rooms are going to be functioning and how are the players going to get to the ice and what's video replay look like. All those things have to be discussed and decided on. But we got official notice last week from Mike Ostrowski with the Cleveland Monsters that they were going to go ahead with this. And for me, it's really a sign that hopefully we're getting back to normal. And there's no way anybody was going to do an outdoor game in the middle of COVID. And now we have one, and hopefully it'll be the first of a string of many to come.
Do you think that playing outdoor games is one of the hardest kind of events to pull off in the AHL right now?
I would say so. Yeah, it's complicated. A lot of work will go into this. And then you're also dependent on the weather. We make sure they have a backup plan. What if they can't play on Saturday, March 4th at 1 o'clock? What are we going to do? So there is a backup plan for that. And, cause there are some things that we just can't control, but I think it's hard to pull off, but I think it'll be such a great event. And I think so many people will have such a great time at it that it'll be worth all the hard work.
And I think First Energy is getting used actually earlier in the year too with a college hockey game. So that'll be a little bit of a trial run before the AHL takes the ice there, without a doubt.
That's correct.
But, yeah. You know, thinking through, we're getting ready to start the regular season, and some teams were able to play some regional games in a preseason-esque format. And so we've talked about it on the show before, just, you know, whether or not that'll be something that the AHL ever explores as being a mandatory requirement for teams, or if it'll remain up to the teams as to whether or not they will play any preseason matchups.
That'll always be a team choice. We're not going to mandate what they will do in preseason. We leave it up to them, and everybody's got a different taste. I think there's a couple teams that are playing 3 games, and some teams don't want to play as many. So, and a lot of it is finding opponents too. It's hard to sometimes, you know, for some of the island teams, for them to find opponents. So it's a challenge, but we won't mandate that they have to play.
Going back a little bit now to the idea of the outdoor games and, you know, having some of those things come back. Have you ever been to any of the larger or promotional or themed games, you know, the outdoor games? The Hershey Bears Teddy Bear Toss is one that kind of comes to mind for me a little bit easier. And what are your thoughts on how they help promote the game?
Well, the Teddy Bear Toss is tremendous. That gets great play across social media and across the world. So we're all very much in favor. But have I ever been to a game? I can tell you I was at the very first outdoor game, in Edmonton, Alberta in 2003. It was the brainchild of the Edmonton Oilers and met with some resistance from the NHL initially. But we got it in, they gave us permission, and it was, I don't know if you can remember, it was a tremendous event. We had an alumni game, before that with the Canadians and the Oilers. And I think it was one of the only times Wayne Gretzky skated in any type of an alumni game. And we were thrilled to have him, but I can tell you, it was so cold that night. And Edmonton can get cold at the best of times, but it was so cold. And actually, the a good story is the I was told that the Montreal Canadian players didn't want to play. It was too cold. And Bob Gainey went down to the dressing room and said, nope, guys, we're playing. So so we played the game, and we ended up losing the game, but it was a great experience. So I'm all those special types of games, you know, whether it's teddy bear toss or outdoor games or what have you, I'm privileged to be part of them.
Wow, that's a great story. Shifting gears slightly, when I look at the AHL today versus, you know, perhaps a decade or more ago, I see a very different landscape, and, you know, that we've come a long ways with teams being closer to their NHL affiliates, perhaps than we've ever seen before. Would you say the current setup, you know, having 32 teams and, you know, by and large, proximity is very good. Is it kind of a dream setup right now compared to, you know, a decade or less even ago?
I think the NHL teams are very happy with the way it's situated right now. We've seen increased ownership from NHL teams buying AHL teams. Right now, we're 21 owned by NHL teams and 11 independently owned. And there's been this, ever since the cap came in 2004, there's been this transition to controlling the development on the part of the NHL team. So that was why the Pacific Division got started, control the development, get them closer to the NHL teams. I would say to you that our league's probably as stable ownership wise as we've been in a long, long time. And probably market wise, we did have a market change this year, but I don't get the sense that there's anybody clamoring to move or anything like that. Now, you know, these things always hit you, and you don't know when somebody's going to decide that, okay, it's time to sell. And I'm sure that will happen. Nothing ever stays the same, but by and large, we're very stable.
Let me ask you this more on a personal level. How does it feel to finally get to that benchmark where every NHL and AHL team kind of have a buddy at this point? How does it feel kind of for you to get that personally under your lap, and as well as just getting that off your plate?
Yeah, I mean, we got through last year with Seattle sending players to Charlotte, and that was always going to be the case. We couldn't get the arena ready in Coachella Valley, and it won't be ready again until December. So they're going to play four games in Seattle, four quote home games unquote in Seattle, and then play the rest of the schedule in Coachella. So it just makes sense. It you know, there's 32 teams in each league, and everybody's always going to have an affiliate. No matter what happens, there's always going to be a team that's looking for an affiliate. So that makes things easier. And we'll see, you know, I guess we'll see if the NHL ever expands, and then it'll be up to us to do the same if that ever happens. I get no sense that's on the horizon anytime soon, but who knows?
I mean, did you have any kind of involvement with the decision in going into Coachella Valley? I mean, that it's an untapped hockey market, really, in a larger sense. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that's, again, driven by the team. And they bought the expansion franchise. And when they bought the expansion franchise from the league, they had a plan. And that's what they wanted to do. Obviously, West Coast Seattle makes a lot of sense. And I think it's going to be a tremendous market. I think if their preliminary numbers are correct, it's an absolute home run. They'll lead the league in all kinds of revenue categories. So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. And we're a long way from the middle of December, and hopefully everything goes well and we're playing hockey there. But really, the board approves every location, and they were happy to approve Coachella Valley.
One final question from me. Last year, there was some teams playing 72 games, other teams playing 76. Tell me a little bit behind the decision of doing that last year and now evening it out this year.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I'm most proud of. And I think it's a great accomplishment for our league. It was one of my goals when I when I entered the league, I told the search committee, I said, we're going to get to the same number of games. I can't tell you when. It's a matter of time, but we'll get there. And little did I know it would, the opportunity would present itself within, you know, the first 6 or 8 months of the job. But what really happened was we got some momentum to moving to 72, and a lot of teams made a lot of compromises on this for the good of the league. And I was very proud of our board to do that. But it was too close to last season to start telling teams they had to, you know, scale back to 72 or go up to 72. Some teams already said sold tickets. Cleveland was one of them. They'd already sold season tickets for 76 games or 38 games at home games. So we just thought the transition year was really important. And it was part of getting it through the board that was very important to those teams. But again, everybody compromised on this, and I think it's the best look for the league. I'm very proud of the fact that we look like a uniform professional league now, and nobody has to try and figure out, well, you know, it's just so unfair. If some teams are playing 68, some teams are playing 76, they're more rested. You know, you have an advantage in recruiting players. If I'm playing 68 games and I'm paying the player the same amount of money in California as I could get in Syracuse or Utica or Cleveland, you know, that's an advantage. And we wanted to eliminate some of those things, and I think we got to the right place.
The pay is something that totally escaped me. I never thought about that as a possible deal breaker for a player who's looking for a new home. But, you know, we've talked a bit on the show too about the expanded playoff format and just, you know, how important it was, especially coming out of the pandemic, the revenue a little bit moving forward, or if that will return.
I think your question was about the expanded playoffs, and really that was driven as part of the 72 game compromise. A lot of teams wanted 72 games, but they also wanted expanded playoffs. And it wasn't driven as much from the revenue side as it was driven from the NHL team saying, we want our prospects playing more meaningful games at the end of the year, whether it's in March and April when they're fighting for more playoff spots because more playoff spots are available, or in the playoffs, certainly there's going to be more games and they get to see their young players play more meaningful games. You know, it's interesting. I was talking to the people in minor league baseball, and baseball is a completely different animal. They don't value playoffs like hockey does. Our teams just crave that playoff experience for their players. And we play 2 months of playoffs. I mean, as you all know, minor league baseball, they crave the regularity of playing every day, having their players play every day. And then they get to the playoffs and they're done in a week. So it's a completely different animal. And it was something that was driven by a lot of our teams that said, we want our players playing more meaningful games.
All right. We have one last question, kind of a fun one, but I'm just curious as to, I mean, you've been around the game for so long, you've been in contact and have played with, or have been in, you know, boardrooms with some really interesting figures. What's your favorite story that has to deal with the American Hockey League?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I have a favorite story. I mean, the American League has been so near and dear to my heart. And I remember how nervous I was when I got on the first board call. I think I was in some hotel room and it was a conference call, and Dave Andrews was on and Sherry Basson was on from Quebec. And I was so nervous. And then one of the legendary things about the American League is the summer meetings in Hilton Head. I don't know if you've all heard of that, but that's our annual meeting in Hilton Head. And there's lots of stories of many people going there with suits and ties and going to the board meeting. And of course, everybody's in shorts and t-shirts, and then you kind of feel out of place. So it's such a great league. There's so much collaboration in this league, people working together, trying to help each other, especially off the ice, not so much on the ice, of course, but off the ice, there's so much collaboration and trying to help each other because we're all just trying to grow the sport.
Absolutely. And yeah, I understand that whole mindset of going in with the suits, coming out, you know, okay, I'm a little bit overdressed. I think we've all been there, you know, our first time into a lot of things. I know I've been there on the media side with this, you know, overdressing, but rather do that than underdress. Yes, but I guess technically one more. Any message for the fans as we begin the 2022-23 AHL season?
Yeah, we're just so grateful to the fans. We had a terrific year last year in the middle of COVID with lots of restrictions, and our fans were there through thick and thin. And I think it's going to be an exciting season. We've got AHL TV Freeview this weekend, so our fans can look for free and see if they like the product. And it's going to be an exciting season. I mean, this game is in such a good place, not only at our level, but at the NHL level and a lot of places. The players are so good and so skilled and so fast. It's just terrific entertainment.
All right, Scott Housen, thank you once again for taking time out of, I'm sure, your extremely busy schedule to be with us here at the Holy Grail podcast.
Yeah, you just let me know when you want me back on.
All right, now that we are moving into actual meaningful games, not that preseason games aren't meaningful, but games that literally count for standings points, not points percentage. Don't forget, we are moving away from that back to the much easier to follow method of determining, you know, who stands where in the standings. But we're going to go ahead with our picks for the game of the week. Just like every other time we go down the list, alphabetical order, Andrew has his pick first.
All right. And, you know, I'm being right up front. Unashamed beat bias here, but this Saturday you have a retooled Admirals squad that's looking for revenge against the reigning champs in Chicago. They're going to be raising their fifth championship banner. Yours truly is going to be there at Allstate Arena. I mean, good old-fashioned rivalry to kick off the season. What more could you want? I think these two teams are going to be the class of the Central going through, and it's going to be a lot of fun to kick off.
I'm going on the beat bias here as well for my pick. On Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. start time here in the Eastern time zone, it's going to be the Hershey Bears hosting the Lehigh Valley Phantoms for the first of 14 games between the two teams this season. It's the first installment of or will be one of the first installments, I should say, of the Battle of Pennsylvania, which I'm going to be going in depth on later on Field Pass Hockey. Very excited to get back at it. It's going to be a more, you know, all the seasons between the Bears and the Phantoms are very contentious, very tight checking, a lot of nasty between those two teams. You know, for both teams, they're kind of looking for revenge on the other. I know at times Lehigh Valley had the edge on Hershey, especially when it came to games played in Allentown last season. But, you know, the Bears kind of capped it all off by clinching their playoff spot and punching their ticket in that respect in a game in Lehigh Valley that also kind of killed the Phantoms' last remaining hopes at a playoff spot. So looking forward to getting back at it. It's going to be a lot of nasty. It's going to be a pretty good good series this season, I believe.
Well, my pick is also pretty playoff inspired, and that's going to be between Hartford and Charlotte on Sunday. So Charlotte obviously had their run cut short by Springfield last season. So they're coming back this season, hoping to, you know, reclaim the Calder Cup after, you know, holding on to it for so long during all the COVID seasons. And so they're going to be fun to watch this year. Where are they playing at, folks? Where are they playing?
Bojangles Coliseum.
Bojangles.
Yeah. That's the one. Get you a biscuit. Anyway, I don't know what's going on. But another team in this matchup is the Hartford Wolfpack. Don't think I've ever had to say that on the podcast before. Much harder than advertised. And as we all know, we talked about it on the show last year. It's a team that absolutely sputtered out at the end of last season. A team that should have made the playoffs and just decided not to play hockey in April. And so for that reason, they're coming in newly inspired, all the returning guys there in Hartford. And so it's going to be fun to watch that one. Hopefully it's a good one.
Great way to watch the clean slate is this weekend as Coachella makes their debut and so does Calgary at the Saddle Dome. So I guess you can kind of figure who's on the road there. It's a fresh new team for Coachella Valley. Lots of players. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast before. And Calgary's got a really good look after coming from Stockton. Stockton had a lot of success last year, a lot of good players that have graduated up to the Calgary organization. So it'll be a bit of an interesting look for opening night for Calgary and as well for the brand new Coachella Valley Firebirds.
And a bit of shameless self-promotion, but if you're interested in that Charlotte game and not near a TV or any way you can watch the game, you can stream the audio live on the Field Pass Hockey app. you know, Charlotte Checker is partnering with us once again to offer their streams on our app. And you can download that on the Google Play or the Apple App Store. So, and then, of course, as Scott Housen said, all the games for this opening weekend are available for free with AHL TV. So you can go ahead, watch those games, see if you agree with our picks. Do they pan out the way that we thought they would? So yeah, those are two options for you to check all those out. Then we have one more segment for you this week, and that is our bonus round. Now, Andrew won last week's, I guess, kind of visually oriented bonus round. And so now he gets the honors for this episode.
All right. I went all the way back to episode 2 of the podcast for this one because I wanted to go back to our scoring races and see kind of just who was doing what at this time of the year last year. And I kind of, it's kind of a bit of a memory game also for, well, 3 out of the 4 of you. Sorry, Corey, you just weren't a part of the pod at the time, but you're here now. And if you know this, well, then congrats to you. Do you remember who the leading point scorer was after the first weekend of the 21-22 season?
Didn't? Oh, sorry, this is a game, isn't it? This is like the question.
I guess if, you know, you got it, you can buzz in.
Well, I don't have the player. Why would I know that? But I have it in my head that somebody just went absolutely stupid in the first weekend and had like 4 goals.
Wasn't it Jimmy Huntington with the crunch?
Jimmy Huntington was 2nd.
Oh, okay. Well, I was close.
With those goals, yes. But someone had 5 assists in 2 games. I'll give you a hint. It was a Pacific Division team. Do you want the team? It was.
No, the team feels like it gives it away, doesn't it?
Maybe. It might. It's not as obvious as you might think if I give you the team. But it seems like some of y'all might be a little stumped.
Just a little bit.
They played for the Henderson Silver Knights.
Was it Dora Fiev?
It was not.
Was it Peyton Krebs?
It was Peyton Krebs.
Oh.
That was prior to the Jack Eichel trade. And on opening weekend, Peyton Krebs had 5 assists in 2 games.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I did too.
It wasn't so obvious, was it?
No.
No.
Did I at least get somebody on the right team?
Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
I had to think, and I looked, and only like I just remembered as I like checked out his stat sheet. He only played 2 games for Henderson last year, and then, you know, that whole Eichel thing, because Jack Eichel wanted to play for a playoff team, so.
Oh, whoops.
I shouldn't have laughed. That was bad.
No, I'm laughing. You can laugh.
Okay.
It was funny. Jeremy, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I cannot wait to inevitably forget that I won this week and then put together next week's on Tuesday at like 5 p.m. Looking forward to it.
That's okay. We started recording at what, 7:15? I had this idea at about 7:14. So, you know, that's how we do the bonus round here at the Holy Grail.
There we go. Well, guys, that's going to be it for the Holy Grail for this week. If you'd like to see or hear more of us, please subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Also, follow us on Twitter at The Holy Grail. You can also check out all of Field Pass Hockey's other podcasts, Inside the SPHL with James Hayes, the 3 Periods podcast with Matt Harding, Syracuse Speaks with Alexander Ackerman, of course, a Syracuse Crunch-centric podcast. And you know, Jeremy, we have to sit down and talk about Monsters Musings at some point, my friend. It may or may not be coming back. We don't know yet.
Confirm. It will. It will come back. It just might not be in the same format that you did it, my friend, but it will be back. So stay tuned.
Oh, well, okay. Well, stay tuned for another update on that. But on behalf of all of us here at the Holy Grail, we hope you have an amazing week. Enjoy opening weekend of AHL hockey, and we'll see you all next Thursday. Bye. We'll
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or a topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.